This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. The Buddha teaches us that life is filled with suffering, and if you think that's a pretentious way to begin, get a load of this way. The Roman Stoic philosopher Seneca teaches us that we suffer more in imagination than in reality. Seneca's point, which he makes over and over again in his letters and essays, is that if suffering is on its way, and of course we know it is, it's a foolish waste of time and energy to fret about it ahead of time. Pain will find us all soon enough, Seneca believed, and when we anticipate it, all we do is increase it, which is why I, you know, busy myself on my phone with Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I'm at the doctor getting a flu shot or having my blood drawn. I mean, I don't need to see the needles and the vials and imagine how they'll feel. I'll feel them when I feel them. For the past few days, I've been thinking deeply about pain and suffering because I have needed to go to the local Spectrum cable store to replace my old cable modem and change the billing information on my account. And what could be worse than that? I began Monday morning by cultivating, an unhealthy mental attitude. Not only did I imagine my future suffering, the lines at the Spectrum store would be too long, my account would be impossible to find, I would need some obscure document or number that I do not have and do not know, but I experienced rising anger and frustration and what was surely to come. So by the time I arrived at the Spectrum store at 10:07 a.m., I was at peak pre-irritation. "Welcome to Spectrum. How can I help you?" asked the cheerful young person with the iPad who greeted me at the door. "I need to exchange this," I said, pre-infuriated and holding up my old cable modem, "and I need to change the billing on my account, and I just don't have all day for..." "Well, I can help you over here, sir," said another cheerful person behind the counter. Now, I don't really remember what happened next, not exactly anyway, except that I was presented with a new piece of equipment that was already registered and assigned to my account, and my credit card information was updated, and I was hailed with a cheery Happy New Year on my way out, and I found myself in the corner of Broadway and West 4th Street at about 10:16 a.m. Mission totally accomplished, but my chest full of unexpressed anger and my face still locked in a pre-irritated scowl, stomping home like a loaded musket. In other words, I was mad that I didn't have anything to be mad at. I was irritated by the utter lack of irritants. Now, unfortunately, this is a pattern with me. A day before a plane trip, say, I start getting mad, imagining the lines at the TSA checkpoint, but it turns out that they're not too bad, which, honestly, it's most of the time. I'm left with no choice but to take it out on the lady at the Cinnabon. Last month, I lost my wallet, and I was marching up 6th Avenue, imagining the hours-on-hold credit card customer service calls I would need to make, and the hassle of dealing with a DMV for a new driver's license, replacing the health insurance card, getting a new gym membership. I was so lost in a fog of stressed-out anger that I almost did not hear the owner of the local bodega running after me, holding out my wallet, which I had dropped there the day before. He was holding it for me, waiting to see me walk by. So it was a very happy moment, but only because I noticed that an old Metro card, which had about $40 still on it, was missing, and that gave me just enough to be unhappy about, which put me in a good mood for the rest of the day. And I don't think I am intrinsically this way. I mean, I'm really more of a sunny optimist deep down. Show business made me this way. I've been in show business for almost exactly 34 years, and aside from excellent Writers Guild health insurance and a pretty good retirement plan, the most indelible thing it's given me is a deeply seated inability to know when it's time to expect the best and when it's time to prepare to be disappointed. Sometimes when I tell friends of mine who are not in the entertainment business about the goings-on within the entertainment business, I get a sad little chuckle and a shake of the head in response as if to say, "You guys are nuts. I'll never understand it." I was trying to explain the business to a friend of mine the other day, and I got the chuckle and the head shake, and he even added, "All that money for a few projects, most of which won't even get made? I'll never understand that business," which was an interesting response from someone like him who was a big player until a few years ago in the mortgage-backed securities business. But the truth is, Hollywood isn't really all that different from any other business, except in one respect. We're a lot more emotional. People in the reinsurance industry, for instance, don't stage multi-million dollar award shows for each other. Dentists don't send each other baskets of little muffins. In investment banking, there's no hugging. So we're a little bit more about our feelings, but we have to be. See, a project in show business only works if everyone is totally and 100% committed to it, even though we all know most things, most ideas, scripts, options, movies, shows, whatever, don't ever move forward. I mean, we're all hitting the gas, going at top speed, and we know that the odds are there is a brick wall ahead. But the trick to any creative endeavor is to get over that biggest hurdle, which comes along in the earliest stage of thinking and developing a project, which is the tendency to listen to that voice inside of you, which is saying, this is never going to work. They are not going to get it. It's not really new or interesting. This isn't funny. This is never going to work. Of course, the voice inside of you is often 100% right. I mean, a lot of ideas are just really bad, and the reason they're not going to go forward is because they don't make any sense. But the voice inside of you doesn't know that. I mean, if you're like me, that voice is running constantly in your head anyway, so it's not the most discerning or specific part of my brain. But in any case, it's awfully hard to know if an idea is any good or not before you actually flesh it out and work on it, which means that you end up putting an awful lot of heart and creative energy into things that wither on the vine. But, you know, it also means that you never know. Could be big. When writers pitch something to each other in the writer's room or around a plastic container of takeout salad, they usually begin the pitch by saying something like, hey, I'm not really pitching this, or okay, not this, but, and it's always followed by a but. I mean, we're always hedging. I know a writer who would say something like, if we tell the story this way, and I'm not saying we should, or if we decide to go for this scene, and I'm not saying we should, I mean, we do this to spare ourselves the pain of rejection. If I'm not really pitching it, then you're not really passing on it. Once, midway through shooting a pilot, I turned to a colleague and said, you know, this is really good. This is funny and fresh and surprising, and the characters are sharp and different, and it's going to be a terrific series. I actually think that, and he held up his hand. Stop, he said. Don't invest. Meaning, don't fall in love with this. Don't give this show too much emotional loyalty. Don't invest it with dreams and ambitions and happy endings. And I thanked it because I was starting to invest too much in the thing. I mean, I liked it a lot. I thought that it would make a terrific series, and I wanted more than anything to get the chance to see it acted and filmed and polished and perfect. But I know how these things go most of the time. You write a good script, you start seeing it played out in your mind, you get excited, you start to think about episodes and series arcs and characters, and when they call you up with a sad voice and tell you how much they love you and want to work with you in the future, but for this project right now, it's a pass? Well, then you're left with a lot of emotions and enthusiasms and ideas for episode 16 that you don't know what to do with. Now, that's the nature of the gig, of course, which I totally get, but it still sort of stings. You see, whoever buys the script owns the script for at least a year, and even if they don't make a show out of it or have any intention to make a show out of it, so you just know it's there somewhere on someone's shelf and that technically, anyway, they could make it at any time, but really they're not gonna. Networks and studios are like magpies. It's always the shiny next object that gets their attention. So smart move, don't invest. But really, to do the job at all well, you sort of have to invest. In order to write a script that could turn into a series, you have to be able to see the series in your head. You have to be able to see the characters and the relationships and the stories. In other words, you have to believe that this time Lucy really isn't going to pull the football out from under you. So smart move, don't invest. Just call it what agents and managers call it, a piece of business, which is a phrase I've always loved. I'm having second act trouble in my piece of business. I'm not sure I like the way we get to that big kiss in my piece of business. I want to take my piece of business to unexpected places, you know, that sort of thing. Despite all of that, we still invest. And when we catch ourselves getting overly excited about the prospects of a new script, getting ahead of ourselves, thinking about episodes and stories and character moments, starting to futurize in an enthusiastic way before the script is finished, before the network notes, before the series production orders come dribbling out of network HQ, whenever, before, in other words, it's sane or useful or emotionally wise to do so, well, when we catch ourselves thinking this way, we try to interrupt the flow of optimistic good vibes, and one of us will shrug and say darkly, who are we kidding? This is never going to go. And someone else will say, yeah, I know, nothing ever goes. And we'll be sort of kidding, but sort of serious, sort of invested, sort of not, because the only way to really kick the ball with any style or effectiveness is to run at it top speed and really give it a kick. And yes, Lucy, who in this analogy runs a large TV network, will probably yank the ball away and schedule a reality competition show. But if for some reason she doesn't or can't, then you want to be ready. You want to be invested. You want to be prepared for the times when the trip to the Spectrum store is, you know, effortless. for the times when the guy at the store calls you back to give you your wallet. Ah, who am I kidding? That never happens. And that's it for next week. Next week, a crazy pitch for the Ankler. This is Rob Long with Martini Shot.